how do I convey the severity of the stomach hurts a lot? And then, like, my mind says that, like, is there going to be anything other than a pain medication there? It feels a little hopeless. Okay, you take the medication, you move on.
As a clinician also, like, if somebody says, like, you know, I have little period pain, for us, you know, we have simple solutions, like, take medications and you can deal with it. So I would not say that that is absolutely wrong. Yeah, but I think sometimes it's not a very big problem for, you know, us clinicians. We tend to little overlook it. So sometimes what we have to understand is little bit more empathy towards what they are saying.
It runs in my family. So it really seems like something that, like, women often get told.
Welcome to Berry Nari with your podcast hosts Saraswati and Aditi. One, a chai-loving engineer from Bangalore, and the other, a beer-sipping economist in Berlin. Join us and our expert guests as we enter the vibrant world of Indian women through the power of data and stories.
Hey, hello everyone, welcome to another episode of Berry Nari. So we have two very, very special guests, and we are here to talk about something that affects almost 80% women. 40% of them have such severe symptoms that they almost miss a work day. 20% of them almost have to lie down on their beds as they go through the symptom. We are here to talk about period pain. A pain that has been normalized so much and often is known as a path, the rite of passage to womanhood, that this is something that you just have to go through to be known to be a woman. But we are here to debunk some of those myths and also really understand why period pain happens and what can we do about it. We have with us two really special guests. Charu, who's a very good friend of mine and one of the coolest person that I know, and she's here to share about her journey of experiencing period pain and her journey of managing it well. And we have with us Dr. Shravanti, who's here to help us understand why period pain happens and what can be done about it. I would request you both to introduce yourselves a bit, and then we'll take it forward from there.
I am Charu. I am 28 years old and have been having period for as long as I can remember. I'm a game developer, a freelancer, and work around game, indie games, puzzle games, and stuff like that. Yeah.
Hi, I'm Dr. Shravanti. So I'm a gynecologist and a gynecological oncologist with special interest in women's health. So yeah, let's begin.
So my very first question is something that we hear almost all the time, and it's for Dr. Shravanti with you, so that we start on the science note of, is period pain normal? What is it really, and why does it happen every single month?
Yeah. So first of all, we have to understand what is periods in that, I would say. Okay. So periods is, as you know, you mentioned, like, you know, it's a start of a womanhood. So it is an indication that now your ovaries are functioning. They are ovulating. Okay. So the cycle, hormone cycle starts, and then there is a regular every monthly shedding of the lining of the uterus. Okay. So this shedding, usually once you ovulate, it happens after 2 weeks. Once post ovulation. So this lining of the uterus, which we call endometrium, so this particular type, once the ovulation happens, it's we call in scientific terms as secretory endometrium. So when that shedding is happening due to the fall in the levels of hormones, certain chemicals are released. Okay, so basically they are like what we can say in normal language, like a markers of maybe inflammation, which we generally see in other parts of the body as well. Okay. So those chemicals, what they do is they cause the contraction or the, you know, the squeezing, like a squeezing action in the uterus. Like if you consider uterus as a balloon or womb as a balloon. So whatever is sticking inside has to fall off or shed off, right? Which is the older lining. Now it is going to start a new cycle for itself. Okay, so that, because the basic function of the uterus is to, you know, bear the child, like it was designed for that purpose. Okay, so when that part is not served, it sheds off, and then by the end of the menses, a new lining starts forming. So in this process of shedding that older lining post ovulation, these chemicals is what are causing the uterus to, you know, like pump and shed off that older one. So normally what happens is in the uterus, the blood vessels which are supplying the uterus, they are like interlaced in between the muscles of the uterus. So when the uterus is squeezing, they get, you know, kind of squeezed off. So the blood supply is temporarily lost during this contraction action. So when it is way too much, the blood supply is lost and certain parts of the uterus, they don't receive adequate amount of blood. Okay, so that is when the pain signals start. Okay, the nerve endings or where the pain perception happens, it gets stimulated and we perceive that as pain. Okay, so this is how the, you know, the pain mechanism happens. But it is not necessary that, you know, it should be severe enough that you cannot carry out your activities. Okay, definitely it is a part of, you know, normal menstrual cycle, but it is not severe enough. Okay, so that is the important catch point here, which we have to understand, that it is not, it should not restrict your day-to-day activities or, you know, your work or your household work or whatever job you regularly do it. Certain discomfort is normal because of this cramping action, and there are characteristics like, you know, usually it will be in the lower part of your tummy, which we call the, you know, above your pubis or centrally in the center, not to one particular side or anywhere. And it will be a little bit intermittent cramping kind. Okay. So this is a normal, you know, what we see in menstrual cycle. Now, if we talk about primary dysmenorrhea, or what we are, you know, right now discussing about it, so this is commonly seen in adolescents. Okay, so usually they say the percentage could be up to 60 to 90% of adolescents you know experience primary dysmenorrhea. Obviously not everyone has a severe, you know, quantification. So now if you want to quantify it on a scale, probably we do not have a, you know, measuring scale as such, because of, you know, a lot of factors. Probably we will discuss that way forward. But so one thing to measure as a clinician, I'm saying that what we commonly look into when we want to treat that particular period pain is if it is affecting your day-to-day activities. Like, it should not restrict your day-to-day activities. It should not make you lie in your bed. It should not make you lose your work days. It should not make you lose your school days. Okay. So that is more or less the, you know, primary structure about dysmenorrhea.
I have a question I have seen for myself that some months I have more pain and some months I don't have pain. And I've also noticed that I have pain well into the adulthood. I'm in my 30s and I still experience pain. So why is this variation in pain, and why do some women experience more pain than some other women? Like, what's happening there?
Yeah. This dysmenorrhea can be different based on how much the blood supply, you know, is getting compromised during those, those contractions when it happens during your periods. So for every woman, it is different. Okay. And typically primary dysmenorrhea, like I have not mentioned, no, what is primary dysmenorrhea and what is secondary dysmenorrhea, if I just want to tell you a little bit about it. So primary is something which starts from the onset of your periods, like from the time we start our menses. Okay. And usually it may not be immediately, but maybe a couple of months after you start your periods, because when during our adolescence, we start our periods, we are not ovulating from the beginning. Not everyone starts ovulating from the beginning. So initial few cycles are like anovulatory. So we do not ovulate, but we will have regular periods, or maybe sometimes even irregular periods up to 2 years of age. So if you notice that commonly it will be like maybe after a couple of months or maybe after 2 years of after the onset of menses is what we see the dysmenorrhea starting, primary dysmenorrhea. So primary dysmenorrhea, we call it when there are typical characteristics of pain and from the onset of menses, and there is no pathological cause for that pain. Okay. So it will be there from the beginning. Okay. So it will not be suddenly coming at 30 years of age or 25 years of age. So women who are experiencing primary dysmenorrhea, it will be from the beginning of their onset of menses. Okay. So if we find any pathological cause, like there are many causes, it could be some cyst or it could be some fibroids or sometimes, you know, even endometriosis, we are, you know, being more aware of this condition. So these are the, you know, conditions. If pain is happening because of that, then we call it a secondary dysmenorrhea. Otherwise, it is primary dysmenorrhea. Okay. So it depends. So it is classified particularly when you are having ovulatory cycles. Okay. So that is, so ovulation starts from the time of your onset of menses. So it will be there from that. As a person ages, generally there is a trend in decrease in the dysmenorrhea. I mean, severity is what they say. Even sometimes after childbirth, also certain women experience that there is slight decrease in the severity of the pain, what they experience before their pregnancy journey.
I have so many more questions to ask, but I'll go to Charu first. Charu, I know that, I mean, I have known that you have had experience with period pain. How's been your journey, like from childhood to now, of experiencing period pain or knowing about it or measuring how severe it is?
As the doctor said, I remember, like, I always had to have mild pain in the starting, but in a couple of years, the pain went pretty severe, to the point where I was not doing anything. I was lying down and the cramps were really bad, especially the first couple of days of periods, and I couldn't do anything. And I think there are times that I've like missed exams and stuff because the pain was a lot. And I remember it going pretty bad, bad pain till about 2020. It was really high pain. And then in 2020, I had a really bad period where like it lasted for 30 days and I just went to the gynec at that time. And turns out like I had a cyst in my ovaries and they put me on birth control after that for a while. And my period pain like really reduced from that. Like the cyst was still there. I eventually had to get a laparoscopy for it. But because of that, like they kept me on birth control for 1 year. Then after, it didn't go away. So after surgery also, they kept me on for like 8 months. And then the period pain was just, it was there, but it was so mild that I could do anything. I could do a very heavy workout while on my period pain. And I did stop taking the medication for like a couple of months in between. And I do remember that that particular period was definitely more painful. And I've just stopped again. So I'm expecting the next period to be much more painful than I'm used to in the last couple of years. But I do know that in the last few years when I started working out, like even before 2020, I started working out and the pain had reduced. Now, as doctor said, it also reduces by age. So I don't know if it was working out or something else. But yeah, slightly scared that it's going to come back again now.
Oh man. Yeah. I mean, even if you're saying it, I'm like, bad period pain can be really bad. Like,
yeah.
But it, like, so one, so I actually, yeah, Dr. Shanti, like, what are the ways to, like, for a doctor to measure or what is an assessment that someone can take to understand that this is something severe or maybe now I should see a doctor? One thing that you mentioned was that if it's stopping your day, you have to go and visit a doctor to understand. But are there any other ways that you know that you have to see a doctor? And also, what can you expect like once you visit a doctor? Like, what is the methodology that the doctors follow to understand that this is something that needs intervention?
So, yeah, first thing, as I said, like, if it is affecting your day-to-day activities, that is one point. The second thing is now, you know, nowadays it's very pretty common that, you know, everyone self-medicates. So sometimes it does happen that even after self-medication, there is some exaggerated amount of pain. Probably what the medications they are taking, they are not effective for them. Or if we are missing out on secondary dysmenorrhea, probably there must have been some secondary added cost to it that could have happened. So it's better to, you know, get yourself, you know, assessed with your doctor so that, you know, you can treat the actual cause just in case if that is the reason. But otherwise, if it is primary dysmenorrhea, like as, you know, Charu was mentioning, you know, she was put on birth control pill. So that is also one of the mode of treatment for primary dysmenorrhea. So basically, it is suppressing the ovulation. So the pain mechanism is not happening. So that is why you do not have painful periods. So that is another way of treatment. Okay. So
can I ask you to expand on that a bit? Like, how exactly does birth control pill help with
Yeah, so birth control pills are basically hormonal pills. So they are given in particular dosage throughout the cycle, like for 21 days. Okay. So when normally in our menstrual cycle, there are fluctuations of hormones. It is not like stable throughout our cycle. So when we are giving the same dose for 21 days and when we suddenly withdraw, so this is basically like mimicking the menstrual cycle, but not actual menstrual cycle is happening. Okay, so it is like an artificial cycle. So after 21 days, that lining which has developed, it sheds off. But this is not the lining which has happened naturally after ovulation, right? So because of this constant hormone levels, the ovulation is suppressed. So basically the egg release. So birth control actually means that you don't want to get pregnant, right? So the egg is not released from the ovary, right? So same mechanism, we are using it for different purpose here. Okay, so we are suppressing the ovulation and indirectly we are suppressing the natural menstrual cycle. So we will have that bleeding episode once we withdraw that for 7 days. So that will be like a withdrawal bleeding. It's not a proper menstruation, a physiological menstruation, I would say. So that is how it helps with the period pain. Because in the beginning, I explained, right, why primary dysmenorrhea happens. It is because of those release of those chemicals. So this particular lining which is shedding off, it is not the changed lining which has happened after ovulation. So those chemicals won't be released. So obviously, the pain will not be there. So pain will be much lesser.
Is this a strategy that can be actually used long term?
Yeah, so definitely you need to take, you know, professional help, healthcare professional help, because this strategy, because this is something hormonal, right? So hormonal pills will have certain benefits and certain disadvantages as well. So long term, definitely not advised. It is always, you know, better to seek, you know, approval of your treating physician once in, you know, 6 months or a year, however they advise you based on your own clinical profile. So taking long term can have certain disadvantages, especially if you take it for more than 5 years or so. Okay. And every individual is different, so for them it has to be assessed. Okay, you just cannot blanketly advise hormonal pills for everyone.
Chalo, I wanted to ask you, like, so one, you mentioned about this, that when you stopped in the middle you had like a lot of pain, and before also you had a lot of pain like before the 30-day period episode. At any point of time now or earlier, did you think of like visiting like for getting a professional opinion, or if yes, like what was your experience with that, or and how was that?
I think my whole family has had like really severe period pain, so I think in my head it was just normal to not do anything in those days. Like it was just, I mean, like she said, like I would take Meftil and like go about my day, because like as you grow older, like, the chances of actually taking an off on those days also becomes less likely. So you're just like pushing through those days. So yeah, I always felt like it wasn't 100% normal, but because everybody around like, yeah, dude, it's bad. I'm like, okay, cool. Like you just take like 3 Meftils. 3 days and then live. Now that I have had periods where it doesn't hurt, I'm like, this is amazing. I can't believe. But as doctor said, they're not real periods. So
yeah,
this is so I remember like Aditi had gone to this conference in Paris, and there were a lot of researchers who were presenting about all the research that's happening in women's health and also about period pain. And there was this one slide, and she had sent a photo, which talked about all the misconceptions that are existing about period pain. And one of the big, like, I remember, like, it had, like, a lot of, like misconceptions. And one of the big dialogue was, it runs in my family. So, therefore, it's normal. And this is, like, all the data collected of, like, women in Europe. So, it really seems like something that, like, women often get told. Are there any other misconceptions that you often see, Dr. Shravanti, that women come up with or like are often told when it comes to like period pain, that you hear specifically with period pain? Also, Charu, yeah, if you have heard more.
Definitely. A lot of people, like as Charu said, runs in the, my mother had. So even, you know, I also feel like, okay, I am going to have. Then even I remember like during even my personal adolescence, like, you know, talking to my friends, they used to tell like, you know, this is a part, like you are supposed to have pain, then only, you know, your menses are like happening properly. Like, I used to think, oh, I don't have pain, so probably I'm not, you know, I'm not normal, or maybe, you know, I'm not ovulating. These kind of doubts also come into your mind when you go into, you know, the medical school. Then you start thinking, oh, probably my periods are not normal. Probably something wrong is going to happen. All others have pain. Why don't I have pain? So these are like such, you know, so grossly ingrained in our minds, I would say. Like, we have been told that, you know, you are supposed to have pain, like this is normal for you. Like, it just comes from our upbringing as well. So even when we see our patients, they also, you know, kind of normalize sometimes. Like, okay, I take one tablet and I'm fine, or I put one hot water bottle, I'm okay, I just lie down in bed for one day and that's okay. So perception is probably different for different people based on, you know, their, you know, activities or work, you know, it depends. And even their own perception of, you know, pain as well. So I think social, you know, social, our cultural and social barriers are something. A lot of the times, even I have seen that you're not supposed to take medications. They say that, no, what if I have problem in future, like, you know, bearing children, if I take medications, that is going to affect fertility. Because sometimes we do prescribe like Meftal spas, right? So why do you have to, you know, go through the pain? Like, you know, I talk to them, like, it is not normal to bear the pain. There is no need for, you know, bearing that pain when you have help available. But still, you know, there is resistance from their side that, no, if I take the medications, something wrong will happen to my body. I may not be able to bear children in future. So these kind of barriers.
That's
are
really important point, and I think I want to repeat it because it's a question that we get in every workshop that we take. Like, it's like unanimously single, every time we address a group of women, the first question is, can we take painkillers for periods? So I want to go to, like, can we take painkillers for periods?
Yes, definitely you can take painkillers, okay, but it should be under supervision. It should not be like blindly just taking, and, you know, you're just taking way too much that is causing side effects because of that medication. Okay, so it has to be under supervision. And definitely the painkillers will help you to have this journey better. Okay, as a doctor, I'm saying there are obviously other lifestyle changes also which you need to do rather than just, you know, popping up some painkillers. Okay, so painkillers also come with a lot of side effects like acidity and gastritis, all these issues and long-term complications. Okay, so it has to be under supervision, definitely.
And is it hereditary, the pain?
Not necessarily.
Okay. There's no pain gene that you're carrying around from generations.
As of now, I don't think so. We have enough, you know, literature or research to prove that it should run in the family, I would say.
You said there are other lifestyle things also. What are those?
Yes. So, like, commonly it has been observed, there are certain risk factors for, you know, having a primary dysmenorrhea. Like, if you are very lean build, physical inactivity, if you are too much stressed out, like lack of physical activity, all these things can aggravate your, you know, perception of pain. So definitely lifestyle changes, eating healthy, maintaining a good, you know, BMI, regular exercises, these things, and reducing your stress levels, of course, because stress in general has a, you know, different mechanism of probably, you know, having that pain perception. So a healthy, regular lifestyle will also contribute to, you know, a little bit reduction in your pain. And also nutritional certain deficiencies can also, you know, exaggerate your pain in general, like certain micronutrient elements in your foods, like calcium deficiencies, vitamin deficiencies, these also can aggravate your pain. So it is better to look up into those as well as you talk to your doctor.
So when, like, let's say you're on the day one or day two of your period where the pain is really high, let's say I take a medication or something like that and the pain has gone down, is it safe then to just, like, work out and stuff? Because I do that.
Yeah.
Like, there is no such time, like, you have to take it light during your periods.
No, scientifically speaking, there is nothing like you have to take it light, but yeah, generally we are a little bit tired on, you know, during that time of periods, because we are losing some amount of our, you know, blood, which is basically a circulator of, you know, all the stuff, energy, oxygen, everything. So it's up to your, you know, caliber or level of, you know, how much you can work out. So if you're able to cope up with that, it's absolutely fine to carry out. There is nothing like you have to cut down or you have to sit quiet. Okay, so based on your own, I would say, calculations, probably you can carry out your workouts, okay, if the pain is fine.
So I just want to go a bit deeper into period pain itself. And again, this question is for both you, Charu, and Dr. Shanti. When we talk about period pain, and a lot of times what we see in popular media when people talk about period pain is there's this one woman who's just trying to like hold the belly and then like feeling really bad. And I think from my experience and from women I know that's not all that period pain is, and just like what it feels like in those moments. So what are all the collective symptoms that are often get referred to as period pain generally, and that happen when women are experiencing period pain, and how, like, what does it feel like?
I think for me, the severity, the biggest one is cramps. And I've had cramps so bad that like I woke up because like the pain was so bad. You wake up and Yeah, like because the pain is just so bad, you can't sleep anymore. And like she said, like lower part of the abdomen, and it like comes and goes in waves. So like you just breathe through the waves and like let it pass. And it is generally for like four, like when it used to be really bad, it used to be like for 4 or 5 hours, it would be really, really bad, like debilitating. Then it will start passing away, and then like you get used to it. But then obviously there's like back, and I can't explain it. There's just this weird feeling. The body feels heavy, and everything feels tired. Then day 3-4, I start getting a headache sometimes. But that's like still dealable. The biggest thing is cramps and this extreme body. It's not pain. It is like weakness that you feel. That it's just like, you know, when you get fever and then you take a paracetamol, and once that goes away, there is this weird like lethargic stress that is like, I feel like that just settles in for a couple of days. And obviously there's like PMS symptoms that happen, which are separate. Yeah.
And cramps are what does it feel like? I mean, if you just had to add a bit more color
I don't know, if you run really, really fast, like sometimes on the side of your body you get these stitches. Like it's called, like technically it's called stitches, that feeling where it's just like really bad when you sprint, that but at the center of your stomach, and like it's just happening, and it's very active pain. Like you have to pass it through, like you can't ignore it, and then once it goes away, it's like, okay, it's small. Like it keeps going in spikes for me, at least. That is very strong. And obviously like there's a lot of like stomach, you don't feel good, there'll be diarrhea, there'll be upset stomach of all kinds, bloating, like nausea and stuff like that. Nausea is a little less. My sister gets nausea and she vomits, used to vomit a lot when she was on periods, but now, like for me, it's upset stomach. It still happens. Like upset stomach didn't stop even after taking the pill. Yeah.
Okay. Medically, like what all do we know are connected symptoms of period pain, like apart from abdominal cramps?
So, as Charu said, you know, there could be other symptoms associated, you know, with the period pains, and the culprits are again the same chemicals that are causing the contractions. Okay. So these same chemicals act in the gut, and, you know, even the air passages also. So some people even have difficulty in breathing. Some people have this nausea. Some people have, you know, sometimes obviously diarrhea also, because of increased stimulation of that gut, and even the pain causes nausea and vomiting. So all in all, it is not like alone you will have pain. Sometimes some people do experience little more symptoms apart from just pain. Okay.
And pain is also, so one is abdominal cramps, back pain.
Even lower back pain, thigh pain also, like, okay. Some people have this thigh pains, lower back aches.
Okay. And headaches as well, what Charu was mentioning.
Headaches could be something which is menstrual migraines, we say. So that that also can be, you know, part of it. But yeah, not directly, I would not say it as a period pain, but probably as a part of PMS and collective menstrual symptoms.
Okay. Okay, I think this, I just have like then one last question for both of you too. I mean, just what do you think are some of the structural barriers, I mean, as a society that we have in terms of reaching out for help for period pain? And I know, Charu, you had mentioned that you had experience and you tried to reach out for help and there were certain barriers. And also just would be great to know medically also like the current education and tools that are available for what enable better assessment and what can be done better from, I mean, just from Cranberry's point of view, and what we have been doing over the last few months is to really get into understanding the research papers and the evidence papers that are available for period pain. And something that we find we are often like, maybe like less surprised than we are, is the sample sizes of some of these research papers are really small, like as less as 10 women, 20 women, 30 women, when any kind of like study is done to understand what is the severity of the pain or to understand what kind of interventions work. And we really wished and hope to like see better evidence or just better clinical trials on how some of these lifestyle interventions can really improve the period pain that exists. Or just more literature speaking about it or explaining it would have been great. But apart, like this has been like our learning and something that we also wish, we see some of it is changing and we hope to be a part of the change that happens as we go along. But yeah, what are some of the barriers that you have seen personally experienced or you have seen other people experience as they want to reach out for more help and seek help for period pain?
Which
Charu, you can.
I think before it was obviously that, like, I didn't know that, you know, this is not normal, you need to go out for it. So I think just knowing that, like, what is not normal. And to be fair, when I did get my 30 day of periods and I went to the doctor, I had to go to like 4 or 5 doctors before someone like took me seriously. Everybody was like, wait 3 months and then go, like, I can't keep bleeding for 3 months. I'm like freaking out over here. Like that, I don't know, even when I went, like, it was very difficult for someone to take me seriously. Like, no, I can't, this can't be normal. And even if it is medically normal, like, this doesn't help me. Like, I can't wait 3 months and see if things are going to become normal to do this. So that's why, like, even now, like, if after, in this conversation, I was also thinking, like, if that people told me 3 months, come back when I'm bleeding all the time. And this is not normal. I was freaking out about the amount of blood. So then, like, now I think about, like, if I go and, like, oh, it's stomach hurts sometimes, like, how do I convey the severity of the stomach hurts a lot? And then, like, my mind says that, like, is there going to be anything other than a pain medication there? So, especially for me, like, I've gotten all the ultrasound done. If something had to come up, something would have come up by now. So. I don't know, like, it feels a little hopeless. Okay, you take the medication, you move on. That's what I feel like.
That's a great question, right? 80% women experience it. Why aren't there better solutions to address it apart from pain medication?
Yeah, as you said, like 60 to, you know, 70-80% women do experience it. But the severity is a little more, I would say, in maybe 20-30% or probably around 20% of women. Okay. But I think first and foremost important barrier is the socio-cultural barrier, definitely, and personal barrier. Like, we ourselves do not, you know, talk about it or maybe normalize it way too much, or our society tells us that it is normal, you don't have to seek, or, you know, you would be kind of made to feel like you're oversensitive or something like that. So That is one thing. And secondly, yeah, probably like Charu said, like, she visited some 3-4 you know, doctors, and somewhere I know, as a clinician also, like, if somebody says, like, you know, I have little period pain, for us, you know, we have simple solutions, like, take medications and you can deal with it. Okay. And actually, there is nothing wrong in that also. I would not say that is absolutely wrong. Yeah, but I think sometimes it's not a very big problem for, you know, us clinicians. We tend to little overlook it. So sometimes what we have to understand is a little bit more empathy towards what they are saying, probably they have some other problems as well along with the pain. So it is not just the pain. So I think it works both ways. Sometimes some people are not able to express the amount of pain what they are experiencing. Probably, you know, some people are very good at expressing. They can, you know, just make their. So I would advise, like, make a diary of it. Like this I commonly do with a lot of, you know, patients when they come to me. Like, whatever you are experiencing, be it PMS or whatever pain or whatever symptoms, bleeding or whatever, just make a diary of it. What time, you know, that calendar or menstrual calendar, what you make, that gives, you know, more objective evidence. See, this is what I have been experiencing and it has been this severe, so now what should I do? Because the first moment somebody comes, you know, to us with pain, we say okay, because the best solution available is we want to treat that particular problem, right? So we will obviously offer painkillers. Okay, so first of all, taking painkillers is not wrong. So that is also one of the greatest barrier what I see from a lot of people. Like, no, I don't want to take the painkiller. I will bear it, like it's bearable. So why should I take medication? So that is also one of the, you know, thing I have noticed. So all in all, these are the things I think even the professionals also should be a little more empathetic towards what the problems, you know, the women are facing. So probably that way we will be able to come out with more number of women talking about it and probably, you know, finding ways to deal with in a better way rather than just suffering silently.
So if you have to think of, like, if someone today, yeah, reaches out and goes, I have period pain, and if you have to, like, just suggest them 5 steps, ABCD, this is what you should do, what would be that? And I think the question is for both of you, because Charu, I think just from, like, reaching out, seeking help or talking about it, and then I think just from medically, what do you think would be those steps?
I mean, I think the doctor would be, like, a lot more sound in her opinion over this.
Yeah, but you would know, like, the barriers women have. So what do you think they'd be like?
Yeah, I think, like, especially from this conversation right now, like, one of the biggest things should be, it's not normal. Like, get it checked, at least. Like, even if the worst case is, like, sure, like doctor said, you have the primary kind, you're going to have pain, like, maybe some medications, like, some lifestyle things can reduce it, but you might, so, like, just take the medication. It's okay. There's no need to suffer 2 days a month every month for needless reasons. And I don't know what it is. Like, I am very okay with taking medications for everything, but I've even noticed for it myself, like, with periods, the pain will start. Like, let me see if it really gets horrible. It's like, why? What's this competition that I'm dealing with? And I have no issues taking medication generally. I am not someone who's like, no, let me try to do the natural way. But I don't know, with period pain, it's just like, maybe I can go it for one more hour. I don't know what the reasoning behind it is. So definitely, like, just take the medication and just go check up with the doctor. Like, maybe something comes up. Maybe if there is a thing, because I know, like, people who have had endometriosis, which is not diagnosed, or like PCOS. I don't know if PCOS is actually connected to period pain or not, but those kind of things, or fibroid cysts in the ovaries. Like, I actually got to know that I had cysts in that. Had to deal with that, which was a whole another thing. But yeah, so, like, those, that thing, and if possible, work out. It's always good. Like, I felt like my body generally has gotten stronger, so why not? Nutrition, workout, protein, whatever helps. Yeah.
Yeah, we've definitely seen a lot of good evidence of vitamin D and vitamin E and multivitamins, like, really generally helping with period pain. Taken under guidance, of course. Yeah. What do you think will be the five steps that you would recommend medically, not
I think Charu already answered it pretty much the same things, only maintain a healthy lifestyle. Okay. Have a healthy diet, rich in nutrients. So that is one thing. Then definitely seek help. Please seek help if it is not, like, you know, something which you are able to carry out with your regular activity. Or some people have a little bit more tolerance still, you know, they do suffer from inside, but they think that I'll just go through these 2-3 days. So you don't have to, you know, to go to that extent. You can do that comfortably if you seek professional help along with your lifestyle changes. And sometimes if it is getting worsened, then please do get it checked. Like if you have seen, you have taken medications from your doctor, and after a couple of months, like maybe after 3 months or 6 months, you're seeing that, no, it is worsening now. Whatever medications I'm taking, it is not helping me. Then definitely you have to seek help, because now this could be something else. Probably something new has happened inside your body and it needs to be checked. Okay, so definitely seeking your physician's help will be helpful to tackle with what is going wrong inside your body. So do not ignore that particular part, thinking that this is probably something I have had always and probably I'm just, you know, having a little bit more pain. Okay, so it is definitely not normal. And I think we have to just stop normalizing it, like bearing excessive pain is something great, or, you know, about women especially. So I think those are the things that, you know, we have to look into.
I have a minor question which I realized I should have asked earlier, but is ultrasound like a very common second step that happens once you, like, second step that to expect when you go to a doctor? And why do you do ultrasound, and what to expect? Like, how much time does it take? And can you just share a bit about that?
So generally speaking, you know, we can make out majority of the diagnosis. Like maybe we can reach up to the diagnosis that this is primary dysmenorrhea based on the medical history, like when the woman has started her periods, when she started experiencing the pain, what is the characteristic, how frequently she is experiencing, or along with that, if she has any associated symptoms, like primary dysmenorrhea will have this nausea, vomit sensation, low backache, thigh pain, and, you know, little bit of gut disturbances. Whereas if it is a pathological pain, you will see much more severe kind of symptoms associated with that period pains, like, you know, pain while passing urine, or, you know, having you know, difficulty while passing motion also, like especially in endometriosis, and all there can be a, you know, kind of heaviness or pressure sensation if there are fibroids. So these are some different symptoms. So those are indicating that it is secondary dysmenorrhea, it is not primary dysmenorrhea. And primary dysmenorrhea will be very well characterized in the central part, and it will be crampy, it will be spasmodic, like coming in waves and going off, and usually it goes off by third day of the periods. Okay, whereas in secondary dysmenorrhea, it can start off like a couple of days before the periods are going to come as well, and it can even go beyond the periods. Okay, and they may have pain even outside of the, you know, periods dates. So based on all these things, what we, you know, take in the history from the women who has come with a period pain, we can make out that this is a primary dysmenorrhea. Usually adolescents are the majority, you know, who will come with the period pains. So something which is coming late, obviously it indicates that it's secondary dysmenorrhea. So if we know that it is primary dysmenorrhea, we usually do not need any ultrasound or anything to be recommended. Okay, we can start with empirical primary treatment with certain painkiller medications. But yeah, if after a couple of months also, if that is not improving, then we have to look into the matter and we have to get a further imaging. So that is when we usually do the ultrasound. Or if we feel that the pain itself is pathological, then we will directly go for an ultrasound to rule out any, you know, problem is there.
Thanks for sharing that. I was always wondering, like, yeah, because it almost seems like a line of treatment. A line of diagnosis. So, but great. Thank you so much, Charu, and thank you, Dr. Shravanti, for sharing your experience and also like what we understand medically about period pain. If you have any parting thoughts, please feel free to share. But otherwise, that's a wrap for the episode.
Thank you so much, Doctor, for all your insights.
Thank you, Charu. It was very
thanks
nice
for joining you, and see you on the next one.
Bye-bye.